Come closer. I want to talk to you. I'm going to tell you an astounding story. The story of the Maltese Falcon. 600 years, the Falcon has carried the mystery of a fabulous wealth under its grotesque wings. I could tell you 1,000 tales of the men and women who have hunted this evil bird. But every story has the same ending. Murder. Listen to these incredible people, all consumed by their passionate greed for the Maltese Falcon.
Welcome to the Wind Machine Podcast, not your average Eurovision podcast. My name's Danny Tregoning, and today I'm joined by the cafe to my torty tat tamal, Mark Perkins.
Hi, Danny. Hi, everyone out there in Eurovision land.
You're an aniseed and cinnamon coffee, and I'm a Dayton cocoa tart.
I've always said you're a tart. And I'll probably use that before. Sorry for boring you listeners.
That's very funny. So we're back after a bit of a break. You know, we had to kind of settle into post-Eurovision depression.
Yep.
So we took a little bit of time off to just sort of give ourselves a bit of a break after the excitement of 2018.
But we're back, baby.
We're back. And Mark's actually wearing his Wind Machine Podcast t-shirt, which is very fitting in the booth.
Yes.
If you, because we don't ask for donations or anything like that, but if you'd like to buy one of these fancy t-shirts that you would have seen on our YouTube videos, you can go to our Redbubble store. We're just called Wind Machine Pod. It's really quite easy. But yeah, buy a t-shirt. It's very nice. You look very smart.
Are you filling me up?
I am a little bit.
Like that episode of Seinfeld where they fill up and, you know.
I am. Yeah. Look, it's a very nice t-shirt. It's very soft. Redbubble does good stuff.
Yeah, it came out quite well.
It did come
actually,
out
actually, speaking
well.
Of t-shirts from Redbubble, you know, this past fortnight, it just dawned on me my Sir Hat t-shirt.
Yes, I didn't know.
Was actually made by one of our listeners.
Yes, Philip.
Phil. Lazarus Hart.
Yes.
Thanks for that, Phil.
I love it. He's also on Redbubble and he does heaps of awesome t-shirts. Really cool.
Go check him out.
Yeah, go check him out. So I know it's been a while, but last episode we picked Malta out of the Yoda Beanie of Doom and we're focusing on our favourites based on a jury of two.
We have...
Don't Be an Animal... Or a Criminal.
A great dance tune from 2012.
No Wasting Time. Just Go Home.
A song by a Maltese singer, not a falcon, who has attempted Eurovision 3 times.
And one of Malta's best efforts ever.
It was a best effort to get through that video.
Yeah, but we'll talk about that later. So, let's begin.
The Republic of Malta is a southern European island country consisting of an archipelago in the Mediterranean Sea. It lies south of Italy, east of Tunisia, and north of Libya. At over 316 kilometres squared and with a population of just under 450,000, it makes Malta one of the world's smallest and most densely populated countries. Malta's capital is Valletta. Malta became a British colony in 1815, serving as a critical way station for ships and the headquarters for the British Mediterranean Fleet. Following intense negotiations, the British Parliament passed the Malta Independence Act in 1964, giving Malta independence from the United Kingdom as the State of Malta, with Elizabeth II as its head of state and queen. The country became a republic in 1974. It has been a member state of the Commonwealth of Nations and the United Nations since independence, and joined the European Union in 2004. In 2008, it became part of the Eurozone.
The flag of Malta is a basic bicolour with white at the hoist and red at the fly. A representation of the George Cross awarded to Malta by George VI of the United Kingdom in 1942 is carried edged with red in the canton of the White Stripe. Tradition states that the colours of the flag were given to Malta by Roger I of Sicily in 1090. Roger's fleet landed in Malta on the completion of the Norman conquest of Sicily. It is said that local Christians offered to fight by Roger's side against the Arab defenders. In order to recognise the locals fighting on his side from the defenders, Roger reportedly tore off part of his checkered red and white flag. The story has, however, been debunked as a 19th century myth, possibly even earlier to Medina, Malta's old capital, associating its colours with Rogers in the late Middle Ages. The flag of the Knights of Malta, a white cross on a red field, was more likely source of the Maltese colours, inspiring the red and white shield used during the British colonial period.
I claim this land for England.
Do you have a flag?
I have a flag. The Maltese language is the constitutional national language of Malta, having become official, however, only in 1934. Previously, Sicilian was the official and cultural language of Malta from the 12th century and Tuscan dialect of Italian from the 16th century. Alongside Maltese, English is also an official language of the country, and hence the laws of the land are enacted both in Maltese and English. However, Article 74 of the Constitution states that if there is any conflict between the Maltese and the English texts of any law, the Maltese text shall prevail. Maltese has a Semitic base with substantial borrowing from Sicilian, Italian, a little French, and more recently and increasingly English. The Eurobarometer states that 100% of the population speak Maltese. Also, 88% of the population speak English, 66% speak Italian, and 17% speak French. This widespread knowledge of second languages makes Malta one of the most multilingual countries in the European Union. A study collecting public opinion on what language was preferred discovered that 86% of the population express a preference for Maltese, 12% for English, and 2% for Italian. Still, Italian television channels from Italy-based broadcasters such as Mediaset and RAI reach Malta and remain popular.
We actually have a couple of listeners either in Malta right now as we record or travelling to Malta in the next few hours.
Yes.
So we have Jamie, who's there at the moment, and her photos of Malta on Facebook have just been so exciting.
There's
whole heaps of swords and armoury and these tunnels that are built under the city.
The underground tunnels. Oh, my God. That's
unbelievable.
Amazing. And, of course, Shane is going there. Well, this week, by the time this is published, he'll probably be already there.
So, isn't that amazing? And Mum's got a lot of Maltese friends. We actually have a lot of Maltese friends too, because there's a large Maltese community here in Melbourne.
There is.
You know, you've got so many Frugias and Kalias and all of those that are everywhere.
Our next artist perhaps could be Anthony Kalia.
Well, let's play our first song. And of course, since we've started a new year, we get to actually play a song from 2018. Woo! From a couple of weeks ago, here's Taboo by Christabel.
Sleep, I'm up till dawn. These demons have broken my bone. And I know that you see my
Christabel Borg.
Resistance is futile.
Not that Borg. Was born in 1992. She began her career as a teenager, hosting the Maltese television shows Teen Trouble and Teen Traffic. In 2005, she tried to represent Malta in the Junior Eurovision Song Contest. In 2014, Christabel took part in the Maltese National Final, placing eighth. She returned to the competition in 2015 and 2016, placing second and fourth. In 2018, she returned again to the Maltese National Final for the fourth time, and the song Taboo won the competition. She also studies accounting. It's a bit random, isn't it? The song came 13th in the semi-final on 101 points.
And there's something that isn't included in our notes that's very important work that Christabel does.
Well, yes.
She's an ambassador for mental health.
Yes, she is. There are a lot of interviews that she gave while she was in Lisbon, and there were a few by Wee Wee Blogs. Hi, Sebastian.
Hi, Ant.
Thanks for your video this morning. That was nice. So, yeah, but the thing is, there's also another person who made the cut who's also an ambassador for mental health.
Oh.
Oh, so you'll have to wait and see. So, you know I love an official clip that's like epic storyline.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
This is Taboo.
And this is full of storyline.
Okay. We're kind of in like a concentration camp, right? Is that the kind of vibe you're getting?
Yes, a bit of a concentration camp / fascist dictatorship / Hunger Games.
It is a bit Hunger Games. So there's a man that comes and inspects everyone because they're all on the line, and he pulls Christabel forward, obviously, for some kind of thing. And then we cut to this kind of gladiator scene where people are fighting in boxes, which is interesting. So anyway, Christabel is then taken to the fight, and instead of fighting, she hugs everyone.
Aww.
But it's true, though. We do have to have a little bit more love in our society. So I think hugs are very nice. If you're not into hugs, I'll give you an air hug. But I'm a big hugger.
Air hug.
Air hug. Air hug. The Eurovision stage continues with the box. I never thought about this, really, until just now. There's still the box theme.
There is.
Now, of course, at Portugal, they decided not to use LEDs, which I suppose is fine, because thinking over the last couple of years, we were really heavy on things like selfies, especially 2017 was all about everyone's face, ginormous.
Yeah,
on the, it was really quite weird. So instead, Malta took their own.
Yep.
So they were like Germany, but they took their own. But they took their own and made them into a box. So instead of being like a complete four-sided box, they have four panels that are sort of connected on top.
Yeah. They're a bit like monoliths, you know, from 2001.
A little bit Stonehenge-y.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Christabel starts in the middle, and she's dressed all in black, and she's sort of got these amazing gold gloves that she waves her hands around. She's one of those. She's a talker that likes to move her hands a lot. So the LEDs show sort of people trapped and stuff within the screens, which is quite powerful. And we've got a couple of things where we had, because TV graphics were actually a big thing in 2018. So, of course, if you were in the auditorium or the stadium, you wouldn't have seen half of this stuff because it wouldn't have made sense.
Sense, yeah.
So we've got two TV graphics. One is a heart. It's a pulsing heart. We're not talking like a love heart. We're talking like an actual physical heart.
And did you notice that it was sort of off a bit? It was too high, and then they brought it down?
Yeah, they did.
I think they stuffed up a little bit there.
Did it remind you, because you went to Catholic school, of that Catholic heart?
It did. It does.
Yes.
It looked a bit like my emblem from high school. Yeah.
Yeah, that big pumping heart.
Yeah.
And then she's singing along, and then she opens up a globe in her hands, which kind of looks cool as well. So she leaves the box, and then a dancer appears out of absolutely nowhere.
Yeah, I still can't figure that out.
And she's wearing white compared to Christabel's black, which is quite interesting. And then the dancer just mysteriously leaves again. Is there like a trapdoor or something?
I think there might have been.
And then we have panthers.
Yes.
Which, of course, you know, are like totems for strength and stuff like that in the end. I was really surprised this did not make the final.
On the night, I was pretty upset that Malta didn't make it through, because the song is quite powerful and it has got a lot of meaning. But having watched it again just today, I can see why it may have not made it. She starts off a little bit nervous, like, which is fine. Everyone's a bit nervous. And she gets better, but I still think the live performance lacks the punch of the official
That's fair.
CD sound.
What we spoke about in our post-Eurovision debrief is, I think it was me that said that she was one of the climbers for me.
Yes.
Because the first time I saw it was the national final. That was the first time I heard it. This is even before they released the massive official clip. But yeah, she was really quite jittery on that too. Look, she's only young.
Oh, yeah.
And that is a massive stage. And you've got to remember that it's not just the people in front of you, it's the people on the TV screens all over the world that are seeing you. It's very scary. But I think, yeah, as the song progressed, she got far more comfortable. But unfortunately, at Eurovision, you've got 3 minutes to make an impression.
And that's right. And when you've got so many songs that were pretty damn good this year.
Well, so even, yeah.
So even. But reports I've heard that Christabel is such a nice young woman.
She does seem really sweet.
Yeah. And I've been following her on Instagram the last few weeks, or just before Eurovision. And yeah, she seems very sweet on there as well.
Oh, I'd like to give her a hug.
Yeah, she's cool. Now, speaking of Kalia, this is an Anthony Kalia, maybe next year, but our next song is by Kurt Kalia. From 2012, here's This Is The Night.
Hey, look at me, and you'll see that I'm into you. Time to believe and achieve, I will stand by you. As from this moment on, you and I can reach the stars. All I need is one more chance. This is the night.
Kurt Kalia was born in 1989 and is a Maltese singer. He represented Malta in the Eurovision Song Contest in 2012 in Baku, and he has released 5 singles. He also had a band with him. We didn't get the name of the band?
No, there's really not a lot of information online. Even his website basically just says that.
Wow.
I know. Is he still with us? I hope so.
The song came 21st in the final on 41 points.
It always worries me when you go to look up an artist that's been at Eurovision and you get like a line. Yeah. Like, that's it. There's nothing about anything other than that. But I think Kurt, you know, probably he needs at least a paragraph.
Yeah.
Let's be serious here. The official clip is probably one of the most fun we have in this episode.
Yeah.
It's basically mates hanging around having a party watching telly, kind of what we do.
Yeah.
You know, we have friends over for pizza and we all watch telly. It all makes sense. But then it changes. Then we have Kurt singing in the rain. Very nice. And then we cut to a warehouse with dancers, and that's the clip.
Yeah.
Going from Taboo, which had this massive storyline, to this is kind of, okay, sure. On the Eurovision stage, we've got the same band from the official clip, which I have no information about whatever. So we have a DJ, we've got 2 guitarists, a drummer, 1 backup singer. Now, the thing is, the 2 guitarists and Kurt actually dance a little bit like the Shadows.
Mm.
They've got the kind of, you know, the foot dancing thing. What would you call that? It's not really dancing. It's just foot movements, and they do it all in time.
River dance?
No, definitely not river dance. Don't even bring that up. Thank you. Ooh. Now, they've used the LEDs to an advantage because since it's such a big pop song, they've actually got shadows of people.
Yes, I noticed
that.
That
was really cool. That's one way to get around the 6-person rule.
Yes.
And a lot of gold lighting. And then the DJ suddenly decides not to be a DJ anymore and dances around the stage. Yeah. It's always nice to be multifaceted.
It is. Look, I noticed that Kurt was very good on stage. He was absolutely flawless.
I thought so too.
And he had really great chemistry from each of his band members.
Yes.
Like he'd make gestures towards them, they'd make gestures back, and it was really good.
It's nice to see singers that actually acknowledge their band.
Yeah.
Like, you know, sometimes, you know, when you go like to, you know, a concert or something and there's always that nice gesture of, you know, introducing the band and all that stuff. I think that's really good for unity, and it's really nice when it happens at Eurovision because a lot of our unsung heroes are off stage.
Yeah. Of course.
So, you know, you miss out on those great people because if they choose not to put them on the stage, well, they're singing off in the wings. You know, that's a bit sad.
Mm.
Now, Malta has a massive history. How long is it?
It's actually quite short.
Oh, thank goodness.
Compared to other episodes.
All right, well, we'll get into it then. Malta has been inhabited from around 5200 BC, since the arrival of settlers from the island of Sicily. A significant prehistoric Neolithic culture marked by megalithic structures, which date back to around 3600 BC, exist on the islands. The Phoenicians colonised Malta between 800 to 700 BC, bringing their Semitic language and culture. They used the islands as an outpost from which they expanded sea explorations and trade in the Mediterranean until their successors, the Carthaginians, were ousted by the Romans in 216 BC with the help of the Maltese inhabitants, under whom Malta became a municipium. God, that's a good word, Mark. Where'd you dig that one from?
If I had to tell you, I may have to kill you. No, seriously, it's just another name for a municipality, really.
Yeah, it sounds really fancy. Makes me sound intelligent. After a period of Byzantine rule from the 4th to 9th century and a probable sack by the Vandals, the islands were invaded by the Aglabids in 870. The fate of the population after the Arab invasion is unclear, but it seems the islands may have been completely depopulated and were likely to have been repopulated in the beginning of the second millennium by settlers from Arab-ruled Sicily and spoke Sicilo-Arabic. Now, there's actually videos on YouTube that make the links between Arabic and Maltese language.
Ooh. Interesting. Look those up.
The Muslim rule was ended by the Normans, who conquered the island in 1091. The Norman period was productive. Malta became a part of the newly formed Kingdom of Sicily, which also covered the island of Sicily and the southern part of the Italian peninsula. Malta formed part of the Holy Roman Empire for 72 years. For a long time, it remained solely a fortified garrison. A mass expulsion of Arabs occurred in 1224, and the entire Christian male population of Salerno in Abruzzo was deported to Malta in the same year. In 1249, Frederick II, Holy Roman Emperor, decreed that all remaining Muslims to be expelled from Malta or impelled to convert. The islands were completely re-Christianized by 1249. Malta was ruled by the House of Barcelona, an Aragonese dynasty from 1282 to 1409, with them aiding the Maltese insurgents in the Sicilian Vespers, not Scooter, in a naval battle in Grand Harbour in 1283. Relatives of the Kings of Aragon, hey, we're back to Lord of the Rings, ruled the island until 1409, when it formally passed to the Crown of Aragon. Early in the Aragonese ascendancy, the sons of the monarchy received the title Count of Malta. During this time, much of the local nobility was created. By 1397, however, the bearing of the title Count of Malta reverted to feudal basis, with two families fighting over the distinction.
On the 23rd of March 1530, Charles V, Holy Roman Emperor, gave the islands to the Knights Hospitalier under the leadership of Frenchman Philippe Villiers de l'Adam, Grand Master of the Order, in perpetual lease for which they had to pay an annual tribute to one single Maltese falcon. These knights, a military religious order now known as the Knights of Malta, had been driven out of Rhodes by the Ottoman Empire in 1522. These military knights of a religious order kind of reminds me of Jedi Knights.
I thought you were going to go Freemasons, and I thought, oh no, don't go there.
No. Yeah, I wonder if this is where George Lucas got some of his ideas for Jedi.
Well, don't forget, remember some of the early Star Wars films were filmed in Tunisia.
Which is hop, skip and a jump from Malta.
Pretty much.
Hmm.
Conspiracy theory.
The Knights' reign ended when Napoleon captured Malta on his way to Egypt during the French Revolutionary Wars in 1798. Over the years preceding Napoleon's capture of the islands, the power of the Knights had declined, and the order had become unpopular. Again, that sounds like the Star Wars prequel trilogy. Napoleon is Emperor Palpatine, and people were getting sick of the Knights, aka the Jedi, and so Napoleon took over.
Damn it, George Lucas.
This is around the time when the universal values of freedom and liberty were incarnated by the French Revolution. People from both inside the order and outside appealed to Napoleon Bonaparte to oust the Knights. Please, Emperor Palpatine, get rid of the Jedi. Execute Order 66. He reformed national administration with the creation of a government commission, 12 municipalities, a public finance administration, the abolition of all feudal rights and privileges, the abolition of slavery, and the granting of freedom to all Turkish and Jewish slaves. On the judicial level, a family code was framed and 12 judges were nominated. Public education was organised along principles laid down by Bonaparte himself, providing for primary and secondary education. He then sailed for Egypt, leaving a substantial garrison of stormtroopers in Malta. It just writes itself, really.
Shh, be serious. This is the history of it.
I know. The French forces left behind became unpopular with the Maltese, due particularly to the French forces' hostility towards Catholicism and pillaging of local churches to fund Napoleon's war efforts. French financial and religious policies so angered the Maltese that they rebelled, forcing the French to depart. Great Britain, along with the Kingdom of Naples and the Kingdom of Sicily, sent ammunition and aid to the Maltese, and Britain also sent her navy, which blockaded the islands.
The inhabitants subsequently asked Britain to assume sovereignty over the islands under the conditions laid out by the Declaration of Rights. In 1814, as part of the Treaty of Paris, Malta officially became a part of the British Empire and was used as a shipping way station and fleet headquarters. Between 1915 and 1918, during the First World War, Malta became known as the Nurse of the Mediterranean due to a large number of wounded soldiers who were accommodated in Malta. During the Second World War, Malta played an important role for the Allies, being a British colony situated close to Sicily and the Axis shipping lanes. Malta was bombarded by the Italian and German air forces. Malta was used by the British to launch attacks on the Italian Navy and submarine base. It was also used as a listening post, intercepting German radio messages, including Enigma traffic. Malta became independent on the 21st of September 1964, which is called, of course, Independence Day. Under its 1964 constitution, Malta initially retained Queen Elizabeth II as the Queen of Malta, with a Governor General exercising executive authority on her behalf. On the 13th of December 1974, which is Republic Day, Malta became a republic within the Commonwealth with the president as the head of state. On the 31st of March 1979, Malta saw the withdrawal of the last British troops and the Royal Navy from Malta. This day is known as Freedom Day, and Malta declared itself as neutral and a non-aligned state. Now, I know that you looked at this section, which of course is religion, and went, that's a bit chunky, but it's actually really interesting.
Okay. Let's see. The predominant religion in Malta is Roman Catholicism. The second article of the Constitution of Malta establishes Catholicism as the state religion, and it is also reflected in various elements of Maltese culture, although entrenched provisions for the freedom of religion are made. There are more than 360 churches in Malta. Malta is an apostolic see. The Acts of the Apostles tells how St. Paul, on his way from Jerusalem to Rome to face trial, was shipwrecked on the island of Melite, which many Bible scholars identify with Malta, an episode dated around 60 AD. As recorded in the Acts of the Apostles, St. Paul spent 3 months on the island on his way to Rome, curing the sick, including the father of Publius, the chief man of the island. Various traditions are associated with this account. The shipwreck is said to have occurred in the place today known as St. Paul's Bay. I wonder, it's a bit, St. Paul's Bay, St. Paul. Yeah, maybe.
You reckon? It's not a coincidence, is
it? No. The Maltese saint St. Publius is said to have been made Malta's first bishop and a grotto in Rabat, now known as St. Paul's Grotto. Most congregants of the local Protestant churches are not Maltese. Their congregations drew on the many British retirees living in the country and vacationers from many other nations. There are approximately 600 Jehovah's Witnesses, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Bible Baptist Church, and the Fellowship of Evangelical Churches each have about 60 affiliates. There are also some churches of other denominations, including St. Andrew Scott's Church in Valletta, a joint Presbyterian and Methodist congregation, and St. Paul's Anglican Cathedral, and a Seventh-day Adventist church in Burkakara. The Jewish population of Malta reached its peak in the Middle Ages under Norman rule. In 1479, Malta and Sicily came under Aragonese rule, and the Alhambra Decree of 1492 forced all Jews to leave the country, permitting them to take with them only a few of their belongings. Several dozen Maltese Jews may have converted to Christianity at the time to remain in the country. Today, there is one Jewish congregation. There is also one Muslim mosque. Of the estimated 3,000 Muslims in Malta, approximately 2,500 are foreigners, approximately 600 are naturalised citizens, and approximately 150 are native-born Maltese. In a survey held by the Malta Today, it was found that approximately 4.5% of the population of Malta gives no preference to any religious belief. The number of atheists has exponentially grown by doubling between 2014 and 2016. Non-religious people have a higher risk to suffer from discrimination, such as lack of trust by society and unequal treatment by institutions. Well, that's interesting. In the 2015 edition of the annual Freedom of Thought report from the International Humanist and Ethical Union, Malta was in the category of severe discrimination. In 2016, following the abolishment of blasphemy law, there was a blasphemy law?
Oh, yeah!
Malta was shifted to the category of systematic discrimination, which is the same category as most EU countries.
I told you religion was fun this episode. Whoa! So we touch on that whole thing about how all the Jews had to leave or convert. So we're back on that. And then, of course, how the Muslims all had to leave. And then now there's only a few. And I love that, you know, our Protestants are pretty much British retirees.
Of course.
It's fantastic. But, you know, I thought that was a really interesting religion. And, of course, like the history, how they had to, you know, take part in both the wars at such a strategic thing because they were in the right spot.
Yes, yes.
They were really in the right spot. And I saw some videos last night of Malta post-war and, oh, dear.
Yeah,
they copped a lot, poor darlings. So, yeah, but, yeah, that was really interesting. Should we go to Malta?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. I also watched another video saying that only one flight goes to Malta a day.
Seems a bit odd.
That's what I thought. You know, it's not odd.
Our next song?
Well, I was a bit clever putting this song next because you'll soon find out why I put it after history.
Yes.
From 2014, here's Coming Home by Firelight.
Freedom of life, I will express my soul. Look me in the eye and electrify my goal. I ain't gonna leave until you know my name. Stepping out of the shell, now don't you step in my way. Build another wall and watch it crumble by your side. Oh, I'm coming home. I'm not holding back, no, I ain't wasting time. Then you must come for the ride. If your sky will fall, I'll shelter you from the rain. There's not a cloud in the sky that can come in the rain. Oh, roaming through fields, I'm trying to find this new land. It's only 'cause I'm here, I'm finally gone in my head.
Hey, Aaron, I told you it would make the podcast. I promised. Firelight is a pop folk band founded in 2013 by vocalist Richard Edwards Micallef in Malta. The group also comprises of Michelle Mifsford. Oh, look, I've got a bad surname too. I'm sorry, Michelle. She does vocals and piano. Wayne Williams on vocals, keys and guitar, and Daniel on guitars are all Richard's siblings. The band is completed by Tony Polidano on bass and Leslie Descatare on drums. Firelight's style is a mix of pop, rock, country and folk. Richard plays, now I'm going to try and get this right, the Appalachian dulcimer.
Appalachian
dulcimer.
Dulcimer.
That sounds good, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Which is an American traditional instrument related to the European zither.
Zither.
No, I'm saying zither because it sounds better.
Fine, make up your own language.
I'm just making up my own language now. Oh, dear. Firelight also released their first album in 2014. The song came 23rd in the final on 32 points.
Boo, only 23rd.
Hey, look, it made the final.
Ah, true. Good point.
This is good because, you know, 2013 was quite, you know, full on.
Hmm.
It was a full-on year. A lot of people write off 2013, and I don't think they should because I thought that was a pretty strong year.
Yes.
Now, I will explain why Coming Home came after History and Religion. In the official clip, we've got soldiers in the trenches and they're writing notes home. So it's during the war.
World War One.
It's World War One. We found out at the end, didn't we? We've got soldiers with photos and then, of course, you know, some of them get to come home and it's beautiful. And then, of course, we've got the band with poppies in the background. Now, you did mention World War One. There was something at the end of the official clip, wasn't there?
Yes, there was a statement saying, remembering those who never came home, 1914 to 2014.
Mm. Such a beautiful song. On the Eurovision stage, we've got everyone in a line. It's very nice. It's very organised. I like a bit of organised. And we've got faces of people on the LEDs at the back. Some soldiers, family members, etc., which is very nice. And, of course, the poppies feature again, which, of course, are remembrance poppies.
Yes. And they are shown on the floor.
Yes. So they're in a field of poppies.
Yes.
It's very sweet. Look, this song, when we finally picked Malta, it feels like this season's been going on for 15 years, but when we finally picked Malta, this was one song that stuck out straight away.
Yes.
Yeah. And I was like, yep, this is so going to make it. Speaking of poppies and standing in fields, Mark.
Oh, this is very clever.
Oh, I'm good with the segues today. How about we talk a little bit about geography, climate and politics?
Only the three largest islands, Malta, Gozo and Comino, are inhabited. The smaller islands are uninhabited. The islands of the archipelago lie on the Malta Plateau, a shallow shelf formed from the high points of a land bridge between Sicily and North Africa that became isolated as sea levels rose after the last ice age. The archipelago is therefore situated in the zone between the Eurasian and African tectonic plates. Malta was considered an island of North Africa for centuries. Malta has a Mediterranean climate, because it's actually in the Mediterranean.
It is!
With mild winters and hot summers, hotter in the inland areas. Rain occurs mainly in autumn and winter, with summer being generally dry. The average yearly temperature is around 23 degrees during the day and 15.5 degrees at night. In the coldest month, January, the typically maximum temperature ranges from 12 to 18 degrees. In the warmest month, August, the typically maximum temperature ranges from 28 to 34 degrees. Snow is very rare on the island, although various snowfalls have been recorded in the last century, with the last one reported in various locations across Malta in 2014. Sunshine duration hours total around 3,000 per year, from an average of 5.2 hours of sunshine duration per day in December to an average above 12 hours in July. This is about double that of the cities in the northern half of Europe.
Doesn't get dark like the UK does.
No.
No. Malta is a republic whose parliamentary system and public administration are closely modelled on the Westminster system. Malta had the second highest voluntary voter count turnout in the world. The unicameral parliament is made up of the president and the House of Representatives, which is elected by direct universal suffrage under a single transferable vote every 5 years, unless the House is dissolved either by the president on advice of the Prime Minister or through the adoption of a motion of no confidence carried within the House of Representatives. The House of Representatives is nominally made up of 65 members of Parliament, whereby 5 members of Parliament are elected from each of the 13 electoral districts.
13 electoral districts, just like the 13 districts of Hunger Games.
Back to Hunger Games again.
Whoa.
The role of President of Head of State is largely ceremonial. The main political parties are the Nationalist Party, which is a Christian Democratic Party, and the Labour Party, which is a Social Democratic Party.
The objectives of the Armed Forces of Malta are to maintain a military organisation with the primary aim of defending the island's integrity according to the defence roles as set by the government in an efficient and cost-effective manner. This is achieved by emphasising the maintenance of Malta's territorial waters and airspace integrity. That's just a fancy couple of sentences to say Malta defends itself.
That is exactly right.
Yeah. The armed forces of Malta also engage in combating terrorism, fighting against illicit drug trafficking, conducting anti-illegal immigrant operations and patrols, and anti-illegal fishing operations, operating search and rescue services and physical electronic security surveillance of sensitive locations. Malta's search and rescue area extends from east of Tunisia to west of Crete, covering an area of around 250,000 square kilometres.
That's big.
As a military organisation, the Armed Forces of Malta provide backup support to the Malta Police Force and other government departments or agencies in situations as required in an organised, disciplined manner, in the event of national emergencies such as natural disasters or internal security and bomb disposal. Go on, make a segue to the next song. I dare ya.
Look, the next song is really lovely. And really, you know, why can't we all just be nice? I think that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
You know, what if we could be free? From 2009, here's What If We by Ciara.
Words of wisdom, prophets and fools, wise men talking, tales from the stars, wherever they are, in darkness.
Yara Siracusa, born 1976, is a Maltese singer. She represented her country in the Eurovision Song Contest in 1998, 2005 and 2009, and is, with a second and third place, the third most successful participant who never won the contest, behind Germany's Katja Ebstein and Wind. With her three entries accumulating a total of 388 points, Chiara became also the third most successful Eurovision artist in terms of total points earned in her performances under the old system, behind Russia's Dima Bilan and Sweden's Carola. The loss of her father in 2008 became a tough time for Chiara, but as a tribute to him, she was even more determined to achieve further success. Chiara returned to the Malta Eurosong Finals and won the Maltese pre-selection for the Eurovision Song Contest in 2009. The song came 22nd on 31 points.
Now, we know we've done this contention thing again. We're so contentious. We could have gone for Angel in 2005, which came second, but we didn't, because we like this one more.
Shock horror.
Because we're a jury of two.
Yes.
Yeah, this song is really lovely. God, she's got a voice.
Oh.
Now, the official clip is basically snippets of national final footage plus recording footage plus other performances, and that's it.
It was a bit bizarre, and the copy we watched was pretty grainy. So.
It wasn't even Vaseline on the lens. It was like trying to watch it through a snowstorm. I don't know what was going on. It might have been our YouTube. You never know.
It could have been.
Sometimes,
yeah.
You know. The Eurovision stage, you remember how 2009 was very circular. We had a lot of circles in it. We had a circular stage. We had circular staging. And we had that big circle in the middle. Everything of this stage is blue.
Mm.
And it's gorgeous. And it all sort of looks like stars and constellations and patterns and stuff while she sings. And she's dressed in this really lovely sparkly black dress. But seriously, this song talks to me more than Angel.
Mm. Yeah, it is a much better song than Angel.
I think it is. And she probably deserved a little bit higher. But then again, you know, 2009 was a very strange year.
Well, where was it?
Yeah. It was basically the troll song year. But see, the thing is, right, there were so many troll songs in the final and she still only made it 22nd. Like, how the hell did that happen?
I know. I don't get it.
She should come back and go for fourth. She should equal Valentina. Come on, fourth. Do it.
Yeah.
You've still got time. You're not that much older than us. You've still got a perfect voice. Come back and do it.
Yes.
Why not? You know, Malta does, you know, reuse the same people and also reuses people of the same family, which, of course, did not make the podcast. I'm so sorry. We were against a whole family.
Ooh, contentious.
But, yeah, bring it back. Mm. I think that would be really good, because she's got to win it sometime, surely. Mm.
Now, speaking of multiple Maltese entries in Eurovision, why don't you, Danny, talk about Malta in Eurovision?
Malta has participated in the Eurovision Song Contest 31 times since its debut in 1971, although the history of the national song contest organised in the Maltese Islands dates back to 1960. When the first Malta Song Festival took place. They were desperate to get in, weren't they?
Hmm.
Malta has never won the contest, although it has finished second twice and third twice. At first, the island state sent songs in its native language of Maltese, but failed to rank highly, finishing last in the first two attempts of the contest in 1971 and 1972, and then withdrew after 1975. Malta's return to the contest in 1991, after a 16-year absence, proved to be more successful, with eight consecutive top placings between 91 and 98, and finishing in the top 10 in 12 out of 15 contests from 91 to 2005. Malta's 2 seconds and 2/3 placings make it one of the most successful countries not to win a contest.
Ooh, always the bridesmaid.
Always the bridesmaid. Together with France, Spain, Sweden and the United Kingdom, Malta is one of the few countries that has not missed a contest since 1991. The Maltese broadcasters of the show are the Public Broadcasting Service. All shows are transmitted live on TVM Malta and Radio Malta. Also, along with Croatia and Sweden, it's the only country never to be relegated under the old system. And that wasn't part of the Big Four.
Ooh.
Yeah, see, very cool. Since 2000, Malta has performed in English every year, except for once with a mix of English and Maltese. Malta usually gives their top points to Italy, Sweden, and the UK, and receive their most points from the UK, Ireland, Spain, and Croatia.
So by talking about the history of Malta,
mm-hmm.
we now understand why
mm-hmm.
they have this relationship mm-hmm. with the UK in Eurovision.
Yeah, and, you know, even with Italy as well,
yeah.
you know, being so close, like, you know, that kind of, that whole block voting thing, who else is in Eurovision that's close to them?
Yeah, exactly.
It's Italy. So, of course, they're going to vote for Italy.
Oh.
And, of course, with all the expats that are in that are in Malta from the UK.
That'd do it.
Yeah, they come for the sunshine.
The UK diaspora.
Oh, absolutely. So, you're probably thinking, which song? Because we said that Angel didn't make it. So, which other song came second, Mark?
Well, that song was from 2002. And it's Seventh Wonder by Ira Losko. MQR, born 1981, is a Maltese singer. MQR is the Medal for Service to the Republic, given to Maltese citizens for distinguished services to Malta. Ooh.
I know.
Ira represented her country, Malta, at the Eurovision Song Contest 2002 with Seventh Wonder, and then came back 14 years later in 2016 with Walk on Water. Do you think she's still pregnant? Yes, our Australian commentators kept saying that.
It was Sam. Sam was obsessed with the fact that she was pregnant.
Like, through the semis. Oh.
No, I'm pretty sure the baby is cooked by now. Yeah, I'm pretty sure the baby's fine.
So, yes, unfortunately, Walk on Water didn't make the podcast.
It was pretty bloody close.
It was close. She has publicly expressed her support for a number of social causes in Malta, including LGBT rights and anti-bullying campaigns amongst teenagers. In 2014, she was nominated for the first LGBTI Community Awards organised by the Malta Gay Rights Movement. Good work.
Mm-hmm.
The song came second in 2002 on 164 points.
This is another lady that I desperately want to give a hug to because I love that there's people that use Eurovision to promote social causes.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, for Christabel to be about anti-bullying and mental health and all that stuff, and the same with Ira doing, you know, pretty much exactly the same. It's fantastic because we got to break the taboo.
Uh-huh.
Now, there's no real official clip for Seventh Wonder, but that usually happened for a lot of the earlier Eurovision songs. There was either something really thrown together or nothing at all. There were a heap of national final stuff, so if you want to look at that, look at that. But if you're playing bingo at home, we've got a white outfit. Tick. We've got five backup singers. I don't think she needed them. She was, what, 21 or something when she did this?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, she had a really good voice as a 21-year-old. And then, of course, coming back, you know, in 2016, the voice just matured.
Oh,
like,
yes.
It was amazing. The staging is kind of yellow, orange and red background, which is, you know, doesn't really make much sense with the actual song. But, no, that's fine. It doesn't put me off. But then she does something sneaky before the key change. And I was watching it and I'm thinking, why is she fiddling? Because it's like a white jumpsuit that's kind of lacy. Like, you'd have to, like, I wouldn't get away with it. I've got too many lumps and bumps. But she's playing with her side and I'm thinking, oh, what's happening? And then all of a sudden she pulls out a handful of glitter and blows it at the camera, which would absolutely freak you out.
I'd be running for the hills.
You'd be running for the hills. But it did look very good. And then she goes for the run at the end. I love it when people go for the run at the end. Seriously, a fantastic second place. This is still one of the songs that I hear a lot on ESC radio. It's always in like a top 10 of Eurovision songs on, say, YouTube or whatever. It stands the test of time.
Yep.
Well,
we've come to the end.
I can't believe it. Our first episode back after, you know, Eurovision depression era. It's okay. We struggle on. This is why we do this. This is why we never have to worry about not having Eurovision in our lives.
Because we're doing this podcast all year round.
That's exactly right. Next episode will be based on whichever country we draw out of the Yoda Beanie of Doom. All countries with five songs or more from 2000 onwards get a turn. And we only have a few left.
Seven.
Okay. Breathe. Could I have a drum roll, please? Jun Olesand, I know you've had a really busy month, but thanks for coming back to the booth to do this for us. Could you just check that we have a valid result?
Hi, Denny. Yes, it's been a busy few months, but we have checked the result and they are valid. Take it away.
Well, it's a good thing that we don't have cameras in the booth because, one, you'd see us in our pyjamas and me with no makeup, and two, you would have seen us do the most epic fist bumps ever because episode 41, we're going to Switzerland.
Woohoo!
Yes! I've been waiting for Switzerland. Oh my God.
And you know, there's going to be justice for Zibs.
There's going to be justice for Zibs for sure. This is one of your huge Eurovision countries.
Pretty much one of my favourite countries.
Which is amazing, yep. Because we've got absolutely no ties to Switzerland at all. But the songs that they bring out are always robbed.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably our Australian duty to go for the underdog.
That, and I think their music speaks to me for some reason.
Oh, look, I'm the same, you know, with Israel and Ireland. I've got absolutely no cultural ties to those countries, but consistently I've always been drawn to them. Mm. And you're like this with Switzerland.
I am.
And, of course, you know, Switzerland, ooh, going to be an interesting history.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. It'll be like, no, thanks, we're not interested. No, you can just fight around us, thanks. Before we wind up, could we have the legal announcement, please?
We at Wind Machine Podcast have taken every legal step allowed to us to present this podcast with a current APRA license, and we claim fair use for the music played. We are not affiliated with the EBU, its partners, or SBS. We are just fans.
You know one thing that I love about Switzerland?
Yeah.
Is their flag is square, and that just makes me so happy. I don't know why. There's something about it that it's like, there's a cross in the middle and it's a square flag.
Isn't it the inverse of the first aid flag?
Ask Fleur. Fleur, is it? You know everything there is to know about, you know, flags and stuff. What's the capital of Switzerland?
Oh, I knew you would ask me this. Oh, Bern.
Not Geneva?
No.
It's Bern.
It's Bern.
Feel the Bern. Why not Geneva? Oh, that's the financial capital.
Well, that and, you know, United Nations or something like that?
Something like that. Yeah, we'll get into it when we get to the podcast. So, I've been Danny Tregoning, and you can find me on Twitter, DanieTreg.
And I'm Mark Perkins. You can find me on Twitter as well, at Mark Perkins VO.
You can find the podcast Twitter account, Wind Machine Pod.
Find us on TuneIn, Podbean, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and iTunes.
And you can also find all of the past episodes on our website, windmachinepodcast.com. Well, I can't wait for this episode, so we should probably sign off so we can start working on it. Woo! Until next time, thanks for listening.
Bye-bye. Bye.